Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a founder that has done it so many times that it's kind of like dizzy. And just to think about all the startup stories, the startup war stories, we're going to be talking about building, scaling, financing, taking companies public, you name it. So again, prepare yourself for a really powerful session today. We're going to be talking about finding your purpose. We're going to talk about also how to get out of like crazy deals where things, happen last minute. We see that a lot when it comes to fundraising as well. Why he was for a few years without starting a company after having done a few before that. And again, a lot of the good stuff that we like to hear. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Mark Swanson. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Alejandro.
So originally born in New York. And also, to a family full of teachers. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Well, it was great. I had very attentive parents who really focused on education. And so both of them were, my mom was an elementary school teacher. My dad was a high school teacher. And so learning was very important to me. Fortunately, they moved from New York when I was just 4 years old. So I didn't have to shovel snow growing up, and I ended up growing up down in the Tampa Bay area of Florida, and really had a good childhood there, and played sports and did all the things that the young boys do growing up.
Now, in your case, you ended up in the military, and that's actually where you ended up learning entrepreneurship. I mean, it's quite the place to be learning entrepreneurship. So how did this happen?
Well, I was, in high school, I was trying to figure out where I was going to, what I was going to do and where I was going to go to college. My parents encouraged me to apply to college, but we didn't have a lot of money. So I applied to the military academy, which you can get, everyone gets a scholarship in. And I was lucky enough to get accepted. And it's a great education and it was a great experience in leadership, which I think I took that with me into my entrepreneurial career. But upon graduating, I was there studying computer science, which wasn't called that way back then, but I ended up graduating with a degree of engineering and focused on math, which I really enjoyed math more than writing, but I've since learned to write a lot better and recognize the importance of that. So I went in the military as an aviation officer. I was lucky enough to command two aviation units, including the first one, which was the first activating troop of Apache helicopters. And so unlike most military units where you join and everybody had been there, I was the first person to show up to the unit. And they assigned to me all these different pilots and maintenance people and stuff. So I had the first opportunity to really shape a culture of an organization from the ground up without having to inherit something. And that experience was tremendous for me. I mean, it felt really like a startup in the military. So, because we were inventing manuals, we were inventing tactics, we were trying to figure out what works in terms of gunnery. And being the first and trying to start up that unit, it was a formative experience in my life, and I wanted to have it again. And I remember my commander, when I left command, he said, you did a great job, Mark, but you'll never have this experience again of forming a unit. And I'm like, why not? And so that led my inquiry into entrepreneurship. And I decided, I later became a test pilot. I really didn't like that much. So I decided to get out of the military and pursue an entrepreneurial career. I wanted to be an entrepreneur the day I got out of the military.
So that's what happened. You went to Georgia Tech, to polish the business skills and also the computer skills. But right out of that, you started Swan Interactive. And out of all things, you started doing your fundraising rodeo there and something really, really crazy happened. So I guess first and foremost, what were you doing at Swan? And then what happened during that fundraising journey?
Well, I got lucky at Georgia Tech and learned a lot about, 3D graphics and especially the internet. I didn't know that. And that was in 92, 93 timeframe, which the internet was only there. So there was no business opportunity that early on. But what I ended up doing was I started doing some multimedia projects while in school. I did some freelance programming, but I was able to recruit a couple people there. And initially, it wasn't even a company, but through that work and through the team I started building, we incorporated in early 94 and then started that business. And I didn't really have much money, so I had to really be very creative on the ways that I was able to start growing that company. So a good example of the creativity was I had a guy I really wanted to employ. He was my first business development guy, but he was moving to Atlanta, and that's where I started. And he could not afford the salary I wanted to pay him. I was paying him $2,000 a month, but I gave him a deal where I said, you could live in my basement and for free, and I'll pay all the expenses there if you come. And he really wanted some entrepreneurial experience, and he joined the team. Well, that company started growing, and I needed some money. So my sister-in-law introduced me to the guy that invented Super Glue, which is a company called Loctite, a guy named Dr. Robert Kriebel. So I went up and pitched to him on his yacht. I didn't have a yacht then. And he wrote me a letter back and said, hey, I'm really interested, and I want to put together a group of my friends, or he has a group of his friends that invested. So I went up there and pitched all them. And, you know, this was a 6-month process and I was still growing. I'm pretty much out of money, but we fortunately signed the deal. And then what ended up happening was we came back and we had a closing dinner on Friday night. This was in the spring of, I think, 97 or winter of 97. And that weekend he had a heart attack and passed away. So I had a really odd situation where I'd already, you know, these deals come together very long. So I'm already hiring ahead of time. I've got people that I couldn't make payroll in at the end of the month. And yet this money that I thought for sure was coming in was held up and would go into probate. So I ended up having to figure out a way to do that. And I knew of a guy that he had sold his television stations and was looking for companies to merge with. He had recently purchased a company that did video production and also graphic design and really needed some engineers. So I basically went there and explained my situation to him. I had lunch with him I found out he had the exact same experience as his co-founder dropped dead. So he and I struck up a partnership. We merged our companies together and I was able to go and take the CTO role on that as he was putting these companies together to go after the internet. So
well, I mean, that was quite the shift because the company ended up going public. You know, I'm sure that it was crazy times during that dot-com craze.
Yeah, it was very crazy. I mean, we, in 96, when I was still at Swan Media, I had been preaching about the internet and the great things. And a lot of people, if you can imagine this, in 95 and 96, a lot of people thought it was a fad, a technology fad. But all that business I had been developing for a year or two came back in 96, and I couldn't, you know, I had way more business that I could possibly do. So everybody was interested in it then. And then it only blew up from there, from 96 to 99. It was an incredible run. And we grew that business from $7 million the first year up to $150 million within 4 years.
At the peak of the company, what was the valuation?
Over $2
billion. That's unbelievable. That is unbelievable. So obviously, in this case, you know, you had the success experience, right? I mean, in quite a remarkable journey. But then the next time around, you guys did the same rodeo with AppGenesis, but you did it in Silicon Valley. You raised about $70 million. You were competing with the likes of Mark Andreessen with Netscape.
Well, no, it wasn't with Netscape. It was with LoudCloud.
With LoudCloud. But that was the time of the dot-com bubble, you know, bursting. So how was going through that?
You're at a point, it's kind of like now, I feel like, where we have the AI bubble and you feel like it's never going to end. But I think, you know, it's inevitable that the expectations exceed reality. But we, you know, it's kind of hard to see it when you have, you know, customers asking for your product and services like that. And also the sums of money, you know, that are being invested in these things are so big, they give you a lot of runway. But it's one of those things where you're not getting much sleep, you know, 2 or 3 hours a night, it seemed like. And you're just trying to take advantage of a moment in time. But unfortunately, with AppGenesis, we raised all that money in late 99, 2000 timeframe. And, the bubble was just starting to peak right around then. And so the biggest problem we had, I felt like it reflected at the board level. The board didn't understand why were our revenues going down, but our business, which was infrastructure as a service, was very appealing to startups. And when all the startups started running out of funding, it wasn't that our customers were leaving us, they were going out of business. So we had probably 60 to 70% of our customers in 6 months went out of business. And so it became, and when they do that, they leave you with a long trail of unpaid bills and, invoices that they won't respond to. And so it becomes a very difficult situation in a very short amount of time.
So then in this case, you end up turning page with a company. You move to Florida to take care of your mom. And also about 3 years, I believe, go by until you end up going at it again, with another company. You were involved with a bunch of stuff, with your brother-in-law, with your neighbor. Yep. But 3 years without starting a company, that's a long time.
Well, I felt a little, burned out, to be honest with you, when I through the AppGenesis experience. So that had been about a 10-year stretch of just really going at it hard. But I really felt like the skills I gained really were applicable to helping other people. So I tried to do a couple of startups then, and I helped out two of my brother-in-law. He was a passionate biker and was a bike designer. He did this in his garage. So I helped him start a business, and we grew that to the largest recumbent bike manufacturer in the world. And then I was helping a neighbor who his business, because of a regulatory change, had dramatically plummeted. And so I helped him execute a pivot, and that was an enjoyable business. I became the chairman of that company. I brought in a new CEO and was able to turn that company around. We sold that to Halo. And, but I still really, by then I kind of missed it. And then I wanted to get back into it. And in the bike company, I was noticing how expensive phone systems were. We were a very small business, and I started getting really interested in voice over IP. So I spent about a year playing around with messing with soft switches and trying to figure that out. And then I ran into somebody with the telecom industry, and I said, hey, let's start a business doing this.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. There's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
At the end of the day, you ended up doing a company called Televations. So talk to us about Televations, because now, it was a few years have gone by, before you actually were operational. So how did you go about, looking at things differently? Because before Televations, you had success, you had, more unfoldings that were not expected, but you were able to learn a lot. So what do you think you did differently with televisions, you know, from other experiences?
The good thing about televisions was that I spent about a year incubating the business in my head and also with my hands, you know, experimenting with different technologies, specifically Asterix. And so the key lesson that I've learned in the past was that I had tended to be ahead of the curve in terms of the business opportunity. So when the internet came around, I mean, I thought everybody was going to see what I saw, and they didn't. I thought everybody was going to see the advantage of cloud service, cloud infrastructure, and big companies just weren't buying it, you know. And so just that experience, and I think one of the big takeaways I take away from this conversation is an entrepreneur often overestimates the response of a market because they have a unique perspective. And I would say probably they underestimate the size of impact and the opportunity. I mean, I had no idea that the internet would be this big, no idea that cloud would be this big. And so, but it's just that you don't want to jump the gun on there, which is what I did. So incubating that and realizing that voice did not work out on, you know, wasn't working at the time on the internet, but I knew it was coming. So we waited till the right time to start moving into a business that, you know, allowed you to get some traction much quicker. So we had, within 6 months, we had 100 customers. And we were not even, we hadn't even built our service yet. We rented infrastructure and got these customers. And then we developed our own soft switch technology and stuff like that. So, and then the other innovation, the second thing would be, I was much better at targeting a very specific group of customers. So we were a leader in voice over IP, connecting multi-offices in healthcare, which is a very good niche. And then we expanded from there. So that business grew really by following a more traditional strategy of a market penetration in a niche and then growing from there, getting a beachhead first.
Now, in this case, you know, you experience it more as a CEO, you know, given the fact that you are a technical person. So I guess how has it been to that transition from the technical side to the business side?
Well, I think my nature is to look at a business like a work of engineering. And I think, you know, your newsletters are the same way. You know, you look at it from a prospect is, you know, how do I design and operate this machine in the most efficient way possible? And I think having that ability to abstract your business and really take it away from your identity is a powerful thing, because you probably aren't, you know, the right person for every job in the company. And I think if you learn how to operate as a machine and find the exact right person to operate that piece of the machine, the whole thing's going to work better. And so that engineering, I actually didn't enjoy the first go around when I became more business in the internet days, because I left the tech space. But by thinking of it differently and enjoying the nature of building a company as an engineer, thinking it like that, it's actually a very rewarding experience.
Now, with this company, with Televations, the company ended up getting acquired by Brighthouse. I mean, obviously at this point, you know, you're quite a seasoned guy, you know, having done, you know, a bunch of liquidity events. So how did the whole transaction with Brighthouse come together?
Well, there's an interesting story, and I've already told the guy to do this, but I ended up having some health problems, and we were right around the time we needed to raise some money. And so you have a very important juncture, whether you raise a bunch of money Series B and get diluted, or do you see what you can get now? So I knew, I looked at potential, who would be in a potential acquirer of the company. And so I called like an industry pundit, a guy that blogged all you know, it was his life to blog about voice over IP and the transforming of the telecommunications industry. So I called him up and said, hey, I'll give you some money if this closes. Actually, I think I paid him outright, but can you put a bug in the ear of somebody at Brighthouse, because he knew everybody, that our company might be open for acquisition, and you know, they don't have an offering like ours, and I really think that the strategic fit there would be good. So he did that, and sure enough, a few weeks later, I got a call from them unsolicited, you know, and so he asked me if we were entertaining any offers or about the business. We ended up talking, he referred us. It was the head of the sales did this in Florida. And then he referred us over to the guy that ran acquisitions, and we developed a relationship. And sure enough, it was a great fit. And I think it was a great fit because we knew a lot about their business. We were a partner with Brighthouse. And it was also something that we had spent some time modeling and figuring out how would we do that. And we had a good integration plan, and the acquisition really worked out for them. And I'm still best friends. And the guy who's on my board, the guy that did the deal, who was the head of strategy for Brighthouse, and I are still close friends and business accomplices, I would say.
So you eventually find your life purpose, which is helping others succeed, you know, and you became also a startup coach, you know, which led you to getting involved with VU Technologies, no? So how did that life, you know, purpose, you know, that hit you? You know, how did that happen?
Well, I remembered, you know, my goal when I was young was to be, when I started, I said, I want to be a millionaire by the time I was 40. And I accomplished that. And so, but when you have, you know, I really didn't have any thinking or any plans after that. And so I kind of wandered for around during that period in the beginning of the 2000s. And so after the Televations exit, and I had to put in 2 years with Brighthouse, I said, hey, you know, I had thought a lot about what I wanted to do. And I felt like, you know, I've learned enough now that I could be valuable to help others succeed. And so I did some consulting jobs with a couple of organizations. And then my most recent one was an advisor. I talk once a month to the CEO of a video production company, and they were a client of mine, or I was a client of theirs at Brighthouse. And they ended up, when pandemic hit, I got a call from the CEO there, and he was like, hey, what should I do? And we talked about the PPP and turning his company into a more of an R&D shop. But he went out and found this technology called virtual production. It came from the movies. And he built a stage on his own and borrowed some money from the government then. It was very low interest, and called me up and said, hey, I'd like you to come by and see this. So I was pretty blown away by what he had done. And he's got a great team. So I ended up, he said, hey, can you help me come on and turn this into a business? Maybe it's inside my company now, or maybe it needs to be spun out. So I helped him and his partner write the spin out plan. And then we spun the company out and raised money for that. So, and it's gone really well. We spun it out in early July of 2021, and we've already had well over $30 million of cumulative revenues in the company. So,
and how much has the company raised to date?
Well, we raised $17 million as a seed round. So that allowed us to buy all this infrastructure. It was a highly capital intensive business. And then we raised another $3 million. So we've got about $20 million into it right now. And then we haven't gone out yet for a Series A.
That's incredible. Now, let's talk about here about the past, because, I mean, obviously, what you've done is remarkable. You know, now, obviously, you know, at VU Technologies, you have an executive chairman role. So I guess, you know, even though you are operational, you know, I'm sure that you have some time to perhaps now, you know, to spend time with me and with us and to be able to reflect together. So I want to put you into a time machine, and I want to bring you back in time, Mark. I want to bring you back in time to that moment where you were coming out of Georgia Tech and you were thinking about starting a company, which ended up becoming Swan. But let's say you have the opportunity of having a chat with that younger self, that younger Mark, and being able to give that younger Mark one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Well, I think there's always a feeling amongst new entrepreneurs, and there should be, a sense of incredible urgency. You're immersed in your own little bubble, and there's an opportunity there. And other people see the opportunity too. And so you're looking at, and you probably do know peers, and you're looking at these other people, and you always feel like they're ahead of you. And because companies, I'll tell you, look a lot better from the outside than they do the inside. So you feel incredibly rushed. And I would think I wish I had told my younger self that, hey, be better prepared for success not, you know, rushing headlong into a business and having to answer the questions on the fly while you're trying to operate a business at the same time. So, because if you have a good plan and you've done your homework, and especially do scenario analysis and what happens if this happens, what happens if that happens, do that. And we did that at View. We actually looked at, we drew a quarterly roadmap out for 3 years. We did, Tim, John, and I, the three founders of the company. And we spent a lot of time in the beginning, 3 months, just planning the business and laying it out. And I am really kind of shocked to see that almost every quarter the business has evolved the way we thought, with the exception of AI. That came out about 2 or 3 quarters early. But as a result, we were able to handle a very big pivot because we knew it was coming. And we've now at View become the first company really to develop a video production system and workflow that's fully enhanced by AI. And that's a big system we're selling into corporate America. And I think if we hadn't gone back and recognized that at the beginning, we would have scrambled. And we built this system when we pivoted in about 3 months, which was an amazing, I actually thought it couldn't be done, but the team there is fabulous and was able to respond and make that happen.
That's incredible. So Mark, for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Just my profile, I guess I'm assuming you share that. I respond to most of my requests on there, unless you're trying to sell me something. But
and that's on LinkedIn, correct?
Yeah, LinkedIn.com. I was the 500th member of LinkedIn, so I got the /Swanson. LinkedIn in Swanson.
There we go. Well, Mark, well, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.